Herzlich willkommen zu Mein Element, dem Podcast vom Lützebäuer Journal und Zusammenarbeit mit dem Fonds National de la Recherche.
I remember telling my friends that I am going to study law, I am going to study international criminal law, and I'm going to prosecute him. That exactly was my plan. You come as a student, and then you think student life is hard, and then you go to your first job, and you're like, okay, that was nothing. I want to go back, you know? I like Kevin Hart.
Yeah,
well, he's great, no?
He is great.
Yeah, I really like Kevin Hart. I enjoy him a lot. I think he would be my favorite comedian. So I do spend a lot of time, honestly, watching stand-up comedy.
Mein Name ist Max, und mein letzter Witte von diesem Jahr ist Tabiba Abubakar. Aber wie weiß, vielleicht ist doch die allererste Kehr, dass ich mit einer zukünftigen, hochrangigen Politikerin schwätze. Dazu aber gleich mehr. Als erstes wird vielleicht nicht schlecht zu erklären, wen Tabiba eigentlich ist.
My name is Habiba Mukhtar Osman Abubakar, and I'm from Sudan. I am currently a research fellow at the Max Planck Institute in Luxembourg, and I'm also enrolled at the University of Luxembourg to do my PhD.
Von kleinem Mund ist Tabiba schon extrem viel in der Wege gewesen. Geburt, das war zwar am Sudan, wir gewohnt wurde du nur noch an den Vereinigten Arabischen Emiraten, Malaysia, Großbritannien, Äthiopien, Holland, Deutschland und aktuell wurde es in Erbisch für das Max-Planck-Institut auch Lützeburg gebrüht. Und wenn ihr mit Habiba sein Lebenslevel so guckt, da fällt einem ab, dass du ganz viel Können an Ehrgeiz handrustest. Zum Beispiel während seiner Zeit zu Den Haag und Grieshaft oder an etwa sein echter Schritt an Berufswelt, sein Stage an der Afrikanischen Union. Die können ihr ein bisschen so wie die EU vorstellen, just eben auch ein bisschen anders. Und ich so, da klingt nur nicht nur der beste Erklärung, mehr du kannst Tabiba aber aushelfen.
Well, the African Union, generally, I would say is the, the regional counterpart, if that's what you call it. It's comprised of the 55 African states. It was initially established in 1963, and it was called the Organization of African Unity. However, and in 1963, obviously, during that period, it was more or less post-colonialism, and a lot of countries or states were gaining independence. So the idea or the theme behind the organization was African unity and Pan-Africanism. So how do we collectively move forward and improve the continent? In 2001, there were structural and organizational changes, and it was called the African Union. So it's basically more or less what the EU is for the for Europe. And however, it's just peculiar to Africa, I would say, with African interests and African challenges or,
Egal ob am Lycée oder ob der Uni, irgendwann kommt der Moment, an dem man sich für einen Stageplatz ummelden muss. Aber wo soll man sich ummelden? Das ist die Frage, die sich dann Studenten und Studentinnen immer rumstellen. Und so auch beim Habiba. Als Juristin hat er beispielsweise können an eine kleine Tüte gehen und da alles von der Peak ablehren. Aber da ist ihm alles nicht genug gewesen. Hat er sich für ein Stage im Ausland entschieden, bei dem hat sich mit pannationalen Dossiers auseinandersetzen müssen. Und ich frage mich, wie hat die Decision heute gesagt? Hat es besser gehabt, loser-lös zu lehren? Oder war der Schritt von 0 auf 100 an Kaltwasser geschmissen zu gehen genau das Richtigste?
I would say the latter. I think going 0 to 100 was the best thing that happened. I had great mentors at the African Union. I had great supervisors, great colleagues, and it was hard. It was hard. I remember once working until 2 a.m. And I wasn't the only one. So it was a jump from, it was definitely a complete life-changing experience for me because you come as a student and then you think student life is hard and then you go to your first job and you're like, okay, that was nothing. I want to go back, you know? But no, I wouldn't change a thing. At the African Union, if there's one job I still learn from until today, is that job. It has built me for my future employment in other places and has shaped me in so many other ways. So I am grateful for that opportunity. That is not something, I think it was great that I did it.
And besides the subject of your PhD thesis, what is the number one learning that you took out of it?
I guess what the point that I said earlier, the beauty and diversity in Africa. It was given that I was born in Sudan, but more or less never lived there. I think there was an experience that I missed on, this diversity of my own country. And I have, I mean, my family always talks about it. My parents are very patriotic, by the way. So am I. But it was really great to go see not only the diversity in Sudan, but when you work at the African Union Commission, you really meet people from all over the continent. Completely different perspectives. Even the way they dress is completely different. And that is in itself is beautiful to see. So if there's one thing I learned is the beauty in diversity, instead of seeing it as a hindrance to anything. In addition to that, I think I learned more professional things, like being organized. Knowing that sometimes you're going to work until 2, you know? And learning from your supervisors. I think I learned to be patient and to really listen to the other perspective. And I think that comes also with the diversity of the organization, because then you hear things that you have never heard before, but it's an opinion nonetheless, and it doesn't mean it's wrong. So it also gave me this, it opened my mind to different perspectives.
Ich freue mich schon, dass die Weltpolitiker bei uns an der EU hinkriegen, Lösungen auf politische Probleme zu finden, mit denen alle 27 Member-Staaten zufrieden sind. Wir wollen schon an die Afrikanische Union denken, das ist noch ein Gefühl mehr anstrengend. Da sitzen 55 verschiedene Staaten mit dem Tisch und diskutieren über Themen, die alle einzelnen von denen betreffen. Das Hauptaufgabegebiet von der Afrikanischen Union sind dabei die Unität und Solidarität unter den afrikanischen Staaten. Und das hören wir noch direkt an ihrer Hymne. Die Afrikanische Union hat also Andruck beim Habiba Hanna los und hat ihm unbezahlbare Erfahrungen, Erinnerungen und Lektionen geschenkt. Aber nicht nur das. Und sonst hat die Erbischt Habiba noch bis heute nicht losgelost, weil die Afrikanische Union an den Teil von ihrem Aufgabegebiet sind nämlich Thema vom Habiba seiner Recherche und seiner PhD-Thesis.
So my new thesis looks at the role of the African Union and its development. And what I would like to look at is how the African Union has helped mediate or settle disputes between states in the region. And what are the mechanisms available to it? How are, like looking at different case studies, how has the African Union really approached those case studies? And I would like to also study in the process through the case studies as well, what are the international legal principles peculiar, or the legal principles peculiar to Africa and how they were developed. So in other words, I just want to look at the legal and institutional framework of these mechanisms at the African Union and how they're adopted and if they have any substantial legal impacts. That would be my main, I guess, research questions. I have chosen, I'm still at the beginning of my research, but I've chosen some case studies that I'm working on. One of them is Sudan. Another one that I find interesting, which is ongoing, is a dispute between Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan on a dam built by Ethiopia called the Renaissance Dam. And it's on the Nile River. And the dispute involves the downstream countries like Egypt and Sudan and the water flow into these countries and how it's going to affect them. So at the moment, they're having negotiations on how to proceed, whether they proceed through arbitration or how to amicably settle this issue. So I guess it's also the procedural, like I said, the leitmotif of this institute is procedural law matters. So I want to look at how, not only the procedural, also the substantive, but what are the procedural rules available to the African Union to settle these issues.
Der Sudan ist also ein Praxisbeispiel vom Habiba seiner Thesis. Aber für was muss dann da haben eigentlich ein Arbitrage, also eine Schlichtung zwischen zwei Parteien gemacht werden? Dafür gucken wir denke, die rezente Geschichte vom Sudan an. Und ich kann nicht sagen, die war relativ turbulent. Zwischen 1983 und 2005 war ein Teil vom Sudan ohne Pause am Bürgerkrieg. Auf politischer Bühne kommt 1989 zu einem Militärputsch, aufgrund von dem sich der General Omar al-Bashir und Spitz zum Land positioniert hat. Ab dem Moment hatte Sudan eine Militärregierung, die 30 Jahre lang aufgehalten hat. Wahlen gingen zwar aufgehalten, aber die waren nicht besonders transparent. 2019 kommt du rum zu einem Militärputsch, bei dem al-Bashir gestürzt und verhaftet genoss.
After 30 years in power, President Omar al-Bashir has been forced out of power by the country's military. The army has dissolved the government and declared a state of emergency. Military sources say it all started before dawn on Thursday morning. Al-Bashir was told by his security chiefs that there was no alternative but to step down, and he went quietly.
Militär hat lo zusammen mit Vertreter aus der ziviler Gesellschaft eine Übergangsregierung gebildet, die bis 2023 stehen sollte. Duno sollte freie Wahlen aufgehalten gehen und aufgrund von dem Resultat eine neue, ausschließlich Zivilregierung gebildet gehen. Für uns ist so Putschen schwer nachzuvollziehen. Aber für Tabiba hat das eine große Veränderung bedeutet, weil für die Kirche im Leben hat er den neuen Staatschef gekannt. Aber nicht nur am Privaten hat sich da etwas geändert. Auch beruflich hat Tabiba ganz neue Touchpoints kennengelernt und die direkt aus seinem Erbeschmutz auflösen gelassen.
It was the first time that Omar al-Bashir was not president. Until then, I've had one president my whole life. So it was a moment in my life that I will never forget. It was new. At the time, I used to work for the other Max Planck in Heidelberg, Germany. And we used to work on constitutional law drafting. So we used to organize conferences from a comparative viewpoint. So we get experts from other African states. And we discuss how do we draft a constitution for Sudan, among other topics that are related to the Sudanese situation. So I was very much involved in that topic already. My interest was there before the revolution and after. But on a professional level, I saw firsthand, or perhaps experienced, how a country can transition or will want to transition to a democratic governance. On a personal level, I witnessed my own country prosper in a way. And not because it was really a nationwide movement from all segments of society. So that was beautiful to see. And that was for me a life-changing moment on both professional and personal levels. And I think until today, it's still transitioning, of course. So until today, you learn, and I do keep up with Sudanese news regularly, so yeah.
Ich weiß noch, wie ich für die allererste Kehr durfte wählen gehen. An der Schule haben wir am Civics-Kurs über die verschiedenen Parteiprogramme geschwärzt, und egal ob an der Kantine oder am Gang, es gab überall just ein Thema: die Wahlen. Und am Wahltag selber war ich dann natürlich ein bisschen nervös, wie ich dafür in der Uhren stehe, aber ich war ein bisschen hoffrisch, dass ich als 18-Jähriger endlich durfte meine Stimme aufgehen. Für Tabiba wäre der Lauf für die erste Kehr gewesen, das hat die viele gehört. Mit bald 30 Jahren. Und obwohl ich schon gewusst hat, an welchem Jahr das gewählt wird, waren im Hintergrund noch die ein oder andere Sache zu klären, dass die Wahltag überhaupt kann stattfinden.
At the moment, due to the transitional period that we're going through, there is a commission that will be established. And it will draft a law on how to proceed forward. I'm not sure if they've already started doing that, but that commission will be established. It has to be established for the law to be drafted for us to know the exact procedure of how things are going to work. Under Bashir's regime, they were obviously political parties were registered. I think at some point we had more than 100 political parties, and elections were held. But again, due to the nature of the country, or the government at the time, not a lot of transparency was given for the elections. And between you and I, I've never voted before. So this will be I'm gonna vote next year, and this will be the first time I vote for my president. So that's also new for me, so yeah.
And if I may ask, do you go to Sudan to vote, or is it possible to do it by letter, or?
I think I'll have to go to Sudan. Again, they'll have to draft the rules. I'm sure there's no embassy here in Luxembourg, but the Sudanese embassy is in Belgium, Brussels. And I'm sure also the diaspora would be able to vote through the embassies, perhaps.
Obwohl, nachdem es mir Tabiba mit funkelnden Ahnen von den großen Veränderungen in seinem Land erzählt hat, kommt am Sudan zu einem erneuten Putsch. Ausstifter war auch das Kerem Militär. Und an der Stunde nur der Murcht übernahm, gaufen Brecke gespart, Medien kontrolliert, den Internet blockiert und Minister vom zivilen Teil von der Übergangsregierung gaufen verhaftet und verschläft. Quelle vermuten, dass Motiv von dem Militärputsch Angst vor dem Verlust vom politischen und vom wirtschaftlichen Einfluss war. Auch wenn die gefangene Ministerin mittlerweile freigelassen wurde und am zivilen Regierungschef Hamdok in der Kauf und gauf, sudanesisch Volk aus unzufrieden und protestiert auf den Straßen. Am Gespräch mit DW News hat Jonas Horner von der Crisis Group als Korrespondent die Situation folgendermaßen erklärt.
You know, this has already begun and people have moved out onto the streets very quickly to illustrate their opposition to this move. And, you know, strangely, this also comes just days after a 21 October protest that had been nationwide and very well attended that expressed, you know, this very hope that civilians would indeed continue to be the main executors of this transition and the hope that the military would indeed recede from its prime place at the table of power in Sudan. So, you know, the concern is for, you know, ongoing civil disobedience, and we hope for not much worse, but you know, those things are really now on the table again. You know, greater violence is genuinely on the table.
On the show notes, sind natürlich auch ein paar Links mit angebaut, an denen ihr die Situation am Sudan nach dem Mol nur lesen könnt. Aber kommen wir aber zurück zum Habiba. Das hat sich mit dem politischen System und Gesetzen auskennt. Ich meine, das wissen wir mittlerweile alle gut. Aber wie kommt euch nicht dazu, dass hat sich so viel in Droschstudium interessiert hat?
Ah, that's a good one. I studied law because, going back to the story I told you about the dictator that we had in Sudan. So I was very passionate about international criminal law in just that aspect of it. And I remember telling my friends that I am going to study law. I am going to study international criminal law. And I'm going to prosecute him. That exactly was my plan. You know, plans of a very young woman at the time. So that was my initial plan. But I really think this one, I'll have to grant it to my parents. I remember growing up, I still remember watching Condoleezza Rice in the news one day. And my father looks at me and is like, when you grow up, you're going to be like that woman. And I was very young. I don't remember. I was like 7. And also law was my mother's dream to pursue. So I think she more or less brainwashed me into really studying law, and I do not regret it. It's one of the best decisions. I enjoy it. I enjoy public international law especially. And my dreams are to pursue a job with international organizations like the UN or the African Union. And it fits nicely with, I think, also my personality. It is not something I would change, so that's why.
Well, Condoleezza Rice are big footsteps.
Yeah, I know.
Did you ever consider becoming a lawyer or a judge in a way?
My future plans? No. I would like to be involved in Sudanese politics. I would like to go back to that. My dream would be to be Minister of Foreign Affairs one day, so fingers crossed. Or in Sudan, we say inshallah. But at the moment, I think I would like to pursue a career with international organizations. So working at the Office of the Legal Counsel of the African Union, or perhaps a bit of professional experience with the International Court of Justice. That would be my future plans, not necessarily a lawyer or a judge.
Wenn ich an ihr Leben als Jurist oder Juristin denke, dann denke ich immer an riesig große Gebäude mit fancy Büros, die den Himmel kratzen, oder so eine Harvey Specter-Atmosphäre, an der sich Leute mit schicken Kleidern Paragraphen rund um die Tore schmeißen, oder an riesige Gerichtssäle, an denen ikonische Filmszenen wie die heute noch gespielt gehen.
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Und ja, ich weiß, das ist nicht immer so wie an den Filmen. Aber die wird man nicht echt verklickern, dass keiner von ihr schon gedrückt durch hat, das zu blären. Bon, okay, vielleicht nicht jeder von ihr. Tabiba zum Beispiel wollte nie in Richtung Gerichtssaal gehen. Hat heute sich desideriert, um ihn neu zu plündern, das geht auf Heidelberg. An einem Max-Planck-Institut anzufangen. Und die Decision war nicht so zufällig.
One reason would be that I believe research does complement my practical work as well. I think it gives you insights or skills that would become useful as well. So when I decided to go to Heidelberg, it was to work with Professor Rüdiger Wolfram, who is someone I really admire professionally. And it was also another interest for me because the subject or the focus was on Sudan. So I worked with him for 2 years on the Sudanese project. One aspect was to focus on drafting or constitutional law, and we worked with the parliament at the time. And another project was working with the civil society. And I really admired that aspect, that not only are we going to have discussions with the legal experts or those involved already in the constitutional drafting process, but also civil society, those who are not involved and perhaps do not have experience or knowledge of such a process. That was a main interest of mine. And I thought it aligns very much with what I want to do in the future. So working on research, Sudanese project, it seemed to fit. And also on we used to write papers on international law and also from Sudanese viewpoint, which I find extremely important. I think there is a huge gap on research from African states. And I'm not saying that there aren't African experts. No, there are. It's just that I want to write it from a local point of view, if I may say so. So that was one of the main reasons I dived into research.
An diesem Podcast dürfte ich los schon mit vielen Wissenschaftler und Wissenschaftlerinnen schwätzen, und das aus den verschiedensten Feldern. Und aus ich kann ihn hier acht für zu forschen relativ gut resümieren. Es gibt eine Idee oder eine Hypothese, und die geht dann mit der Hilfe von einem Labo oder von verschiedensten Experimenten getestet. Das hat dann entweder geklappt oder eben nicht. Melo Maleke Sayu, wie funktioniert Forschung am Droit? Die einen können ja immer etwas Neues erfahren. Aber am Droit sollte das ja eigentlich nicht möglich sein, weil immerhin stehen Gesetzestexte ja schon lange fest. Sie wird an den Gesetzesbüchern oder eben an der Konstitution. Dafür frage ich mich, machen die auch Experimente? Oder klammern sie sich an die Bücher und lesen das, was sie schon kennen? Oder geht es noch ein anderer Weg, wie in am Droit Forschung möchte? Gott sei Dank konnte ich Tabiba vis-à-vis von mir sitzen, und das kann man dort relativ einfach beantworten.
I was enrolled last year, so this is my first year of doing my PhD. And so far it has been reading. You read, basically you have to read all the materials on your topic. So I guess it will be mostly desk research, but it also depends. You can conduct interviews, you can do field studies, but that depends on your subject and what you're looking for. My subject, I so far at least in the first year, I've decided to dedicate it to read, to see what materials are there already, to look at the legal materials, the research already written, and what can you add to it. So I would say that it's more of reading, even though the experiences you told me about, those experiments sounds amazing. I want to do that too. There's no way you can do that with law though. But it does sound very interesting and fun. That being said, it would be mostly research, but there are other avenues in addition to desk research. Yeah.
Ich meine, es gibt Zeit, auch ein bisschen über uns persönlich Helden zu schwätzen. Du machst manchmal nicht als Teenie-Fast mit all den Star-Postern aus der Bravo, mehr Leute, die ihn irgendwann ein bisschen entdeckt hat, vielleicht auf YouTube, vielleicht im Fernsehen, und die direkt den anderen Kanal losholen. Bei mir sind da zum Beispiel meistens Leute aus der Medienwelt, im Sport oder Comedians. Ich meine, ein gutes Beispiel dafür wäre der Conan O'Brien oder der Jürgen Klopp. Das sind Leute, bei denen denke ich mir immer, ich kann so viel von denen lernen. Und vielleicht, wenn ihr sich ein bisschen mit denen befasst, finde ich auch wirklich die eine oder andere Sache, die ihn für sein eigenes Leben aufwenden kann. Und so sind die Personen von einer Art Inspiration zu, ja, Vorbilder von mir gehen. Und ich frage mich, ob dem Habiba auch so geht. Ob hat aus seinem Leben vielleicht Vorbilder hat, die hat aus seinem privaten oder beruflichen Leben inspirieren.
An idol, a legal idol. Okay, I think if I had to choose an idol, would be Fatou Bensouda. And she was the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court until I think last year. So she was definitely an idol. Another idol, I think, is Judge Abdul Karoma, who was a judge at the ICJ, International Court of Justice, and Judge Abdelkawi Yusuf. These are all African legal experts that I really value their inputs and their scholarly work, and they're mentors for me as an African and as a lawyer as well, and how I want to pursue my future. So these would be my main idols, I would say.
Okay. I think there's one difference, because I would have said some, I don't know, silly comedians.
I also have those. I have those.
Oh, you have those? Okay.
Of course I like comedians. I who do we start with? Silly comedians? I like Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
Well, he's great, no?
He is great.
Yeah, I really like Kevin Hart. I enjoy him a lot. I think he would be my favorite comedian. I like Dave Chappelle. So I do spend a lot of time, honestly, watching stand-up comedy.
Yeah, me
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So who is for you the GOAT?
The GOAT? Oh. That's a very profound question.
Yeah, I know.
Kevin Hart. Hands down. Yeah.
Die Episode von Haut ist extrem vielfältig. Ich meine, da erkennen wir allein darin, dass wir angefangen haben bei der Politik am Sudan, rübergegangen sind an die Forschung als Juristin und nun beim Kevin Hart gelandet sind. Aber genau ein Thema, über das haben wir noch gar nicht gesprochen. Weil Tabiba hat ja schon seine aktuelle Thesis vorgestellt, aber dafür drin hat er ein anderes Thema. Und das Thema hat sich in einer anderen Mom Islamic Law befasst. Und ich kann mir vorstellen, Logi bei verschiedenen von euch die echt Alarmglocken haben, weil sie Islamic Law hören haben. Und ich kann den Anfang mal nicht verübeln, weil meistens von mir Islamic und Law lesen, also islamisch Gesetz, dann ist er im Kontext mit dem IS oder mit dem Taliban. Und ich meine, es gibt Zeit, dass man den Präjudice vielleicht stellen und einer ausgebildeten Juristin, die sich mit dem Thema auskennt, nur lauschen, was dann Islamic Law wirklich bedeutet.
I was born Muslim and I'm culturally Muslim, so it's not something to do with my research interest right now. But I would say that the media does, like in many other aspects, could show only one side of the coin, not the whole story. So Islamic law is mostly law that is based on the Quran, which is the holy book of Muslims, and is its rules that are derived from there, as well as something we call Sunnah, which is what the Prophet, the Muslim Prophet Muhammad, has taught or did, and the way he behaved, the way he acted. So it's more of a principles and values that are important to the Muslim population. So that's where Islamic law derives from. That being said, also another term for it is Sharia law. That being said, each country is different culturally and traditionally, and therefore the way Islamic law, Sharia law is adopted is peculiar to that country. So you find law in Saudi Arabia that is different from the United Arab Emirates or from Sudan. So some liberal, some not so much. And it really depends on the country and what are the, I would say, the nation's values. Now, while the media only talks about the Taliban and you know, ISIS and all these things, I think personally, I think they are very important and beautiful values to the culture. Behind Islamic law. So it's not always the extremism that is portrayed, but it comes with very good family values, in my opinion, that is. But personally, one of the main sayings of the, or if I could quote the Quran, one of the things that it says is that, to translate, do not be misled by the worldly values, if I have to say that. And that means do not be misled by the materialistic or by what is shown to you to be important, but there is more to it than that. And just the Muslim saying of greetings, we say assalamu alaikum, which means I wish you peace, or ma salama, I leave you with peace. So these are all, for me, are beautiful values that we don't speak about so much as the other political aspects to it, you know?
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for having me here. And I hope you had a little bit of fun. And yeah.
This was a great interview, Max. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for hosting me and for all the very interesting and hard questions. No, but I really enjoyed my time here, and I would like to thank you and your audience, and on behalf of the Max Planck Institute as well. It's been great having you, and all the best.
Thank you very much. All the best to you.
Das war also die letzte Episode von Mein Element von diesem Jahr. Keine Angst, wir hören uns nächstes Jahr. Aber bis dahin, geht doch einfach mal in die Shownotes gucken. Da sind wie immer die wichtigsten Links abgelöscht. Und wenn ihr schon dabei seid, bewertet auch ganz gerne diesen Podcast mit 5 Sternen. Und so der Familie auf Freunde Bescheid, dass ihr den Podcast auch soll lauschen. Und wir hören uns dann nächstes Jahr. Guten Rutsch, bis dann. Ciao.